Welcome back, friends, to the Trojan Talk podcast. First edition of the spring. First in a couple months as we ramp back up with spring football underway and USC recruiting taking off like a rocket this past weekend. Trojan fans woke up Sunday morning to one of the biggest recruiting wins of the last handful of years. I don't even know what were more. As USC flipped five-star defensive tackle Justice Terry from his Georgia commitment. In-state Georgia kid, had been committed to Georgia for over a year. Number one ranked defensive tackle in this 2025 recruiting class. Number six national prospect. Pretty much the most important recruit that USC could land in this cycle. They got his commitment over the weekend after his visit out here, unofficial visit. And that alone would have made for just an uproariously successful day for USC recruiting. But it was only the start. Soon after that, four-star defensive end Isaiah Gibson, also from Georgia, commits to USC. Then it was four-star 2026 safety Dominic Kelly out of Florida, a top 200 national prospect. Then it was four-star 2025 safety Hilton Drake Stubbs out of Florida, the number four safety in this class, a top 50 national prospect. And to cap it off, a three-star defensive end, Gus Cordova from Texas. Five commitments, one day, all defensive commitments. That's not a coincidence. That was a statement. It was a statement from this new staff, a statement from Lincoln Riley. It just further fortifies what he's been saying for a few months now. He came out and said it in December. And when I heard this quote in real time in December, I thought, well, this is quite a statement. This is quite a pivot. This is quite an acknowledgement of where things have been lacking. Let's see if it is backed up with action. And it has been. But I'm just going to read you this quote because it resonates now, this week especially. This is from Lincoln Riley in December. We're going to do everything that we can in this program to accelerate the process of us playing great defense at USC. And whatever it takes to get that done, from a development standpoint, from a staffing standpoint, from the way that we practice, everything here is going to be done with a defensive mind first. Again, the edge here is always going to go to what's best for our defense. That from quarterback guru, offensive savant, Lincoln Riley, pretty much owning what happened the last 2 years and pledging that a real change was coming on the defensive side. You saw it with the staffing hires as he turned over four-fifths of the defensive staff. And there was another telling statement that he's made several times in that regard that also applies to this weekend. And I don't have it in front of me, so I'm going to paraphrase, but he pretty much said, we didn't care where guys were working, what their current job was. It wasn't going to deter us from going after them to fill these positions. And the worst they can say is no, but this is USC, and we think we have a lot to sell. So no matter what their title is now, we're going to go after them. And you saw that as they started with defensive coordinator Danton Lynn, plucking him from across town, UCLA, after 1 year there. Matt Entz was a head coach at North Dakota State and won national championships at the FCS level and a comfortable position there. Eric Henderson, obviously, who will come into play heavily in the talk about this weekend, had a comfortable career as a D-line coach for the Los Angeles Rams, leaves for pretty much the same position in college. So take that statement and now apply it to what happened this weekend. I think you can say that they don't care what the predictions are for where our guy's going to go. They don't care where he's committed already. In the case of Justice Terry, being committed to Georgia for over a year, his in-state hometown school, didn't deter them from saying, we're going to make you a priority and go after you. All these guys from the East Coast that many people would have predicted were going elsewhere before this weekend and now committed to USC. I think it was as a statement this weekend. It was no coincidence that it was five defensive commits. It was no coincidence that Ronnie Lott was on campus Tuesday when Drake Stubbs was here. It was no coincidence that Aaron Donald was on campus Saturday visiting his old friend Eric Henderson as all these defensive line targets were here. This was a well-orchestrated, concerted statement, and we're going to dive into it deeper with John Garcia Jr., our rival Southeast analyst, has been on the show a few times. Whenever he's on, our subscribers always give me great feedback about how much they enjoyed his insight and perspective. He's really good at what he does. So we'll get into all that. We'll have him break down each of those each of the four guys from the Southeast, at least, and just his reaction to this weekend. That'll be our first segment. We were going to start the show with the return of Max Brown back on the program for the first time in a few months. The former quarterback, our resident Trojansports.com analyst, will make that the second segment because this recruiting stuff takes precedent. But had a great time recording with Max on Friday, getting his overarching thoughts on storylines of spring practice as USC started spring practice last week. Is now three practices in. They'll be back out there Tuesday, as will I, covering that for you. But wanted to get Max's take on a lot of things, especially the quarterback situation, Jonah Monheim's move to center, and how tricky that can be. Get Max's quarterback perspective on that and other topics. Two great segments, full pod. Great to be back with you on this feed. Plenty more coming in the spring, but let's get it going. Here we go. Okay, ST's at the top of the show, back on the program. You've heard before, our excellent Rivals Southeast analyst, John Garcia Jr. joins us. John, thanks for making the time for us on a wild recruiting day for USC.
Yeah, we woke up to the Justice Terry news and thought, man, that's a great get for the Trojans, and kind of thought that would be the end of it. And obviously, 15 hours later, they're still getting verbal commitments. Just a phenomenal Sunday, as good a day as I can remember any program having.
I'm getting texted 7 a.m. Pacific time that news is breaking, and it's been nonstop since then. Let me run down the list real fast, then we're going to get into more about each guy and four of the five for USC today from the Southeast, so you are the perfect guy to have on. Like you mentioned, it started with five-star defensive tackle Justice Terry out of Georgia, flipping from the in-state Bulldogs to USC, our number one ranked defensive tackle, number six overall national prospect. Soon thereafter, it was four-star Deion Isaiah Gibson, also from Georgia. We'll get into the rankings because we have him at number 244 nationally, and he's a little higher somewhere else, and I know that some of my subscribers had questions about that, so we'll get to that. From there, four-star 2026 safety Dominic Kelly out of Florida, our number 156th national prospect in that class. Then it was four-star safety Hilton Drake Stubbs, also out of Florida, another top 50 prospect, number 41 on our board, number four safety in the country. And then just before we got on the line here, three-star DN Gus Cordova out of Texas. John, let's start with Justice Terry. What was the surprise factor for you when that came down?
To the highest levels. We've covered Justice for years, talked to him a lot. And two things were very clear coming into this weekend. One, going to be really tough for anybody to pull him away from Georgia. In-state kid, defensive lineman, that continuity and having been committed for, 14 months at this point was always going to be tough. That's just known with Terry. And two, he said it for about the last, I would say, 6 or 7 months that Alabama was always considered the top threat. Pre-Saban and since Saban retired, this was the team. If something shakes, it's going to be Alabama, and his visits followed that. The continuity there followed it. And then there was a group of programs thereafter that he wanted to visit. And that's to the extent that with USC in terms of what we knew going into the weekend. But obviously, as every Trojan fan is now well-versed, you know, this new rebuilt coaching staff is recruiting a bit different. It's like they're just saying, hey, just give us that opportunity to show you LA. And I think, you know, for him, more than maybe every other commit that popped on Sunday, I mean, you go there and Aaron Donald's there and he's co-signing, you know, the new D-line coach and you're just envisioning all of this stuff. You can understand why a small town Georgia kid could sort of fall in love and pop. But again, his parents were there and USC was in this group of programs since January that had really started to push. But again, still hugely surprised that the entire flip went down based on what we knew going into the visit. And I think it just shows you sort of the power and potential of perception. You know, it doesn't matter what happened 10 years ago or even 10 months ago or 10 weeks ago. In some cases, recruiting is as fluid as it's ever been. And I think Justice Terry is going to be one of these maybe case studies in this class to see how quickly things can change in recruiting. And certainly in my, you know, decade plus long career doing this, one of the more surprising commitments in general that I've covered.
To your point about this new USC defensive staff doing things differently, making their mark, I hit this at the top of the show a little bit, but I'll just kind of recap here. Something changed in November, December when Lincoln Riley fired Alex Grinch and really for the first time started to publicly accept that he had to make sweeping changes and that what they were doing in a number of ways it just wasn't where it needed to be. And he came out in December and had a quote that he's really backed up since then. He said, "Everything we do from now on is going to be about defense first. The priority of this program is building a championship defense." And he went out and hired this great defensive staff. And in doing so, he said this multiple times, that he said, "We didn't care what guys' current jobs were. We weren't going to be deterred by where they were working or what their role was. The worst they can do is say no, but we're going to take our shot. This is USC." And I think they're using that same approach with recruits now. They don't care where they're committed, where they're from. If this is a guy they prioritize, they're going to take their shot, and it may work out like it did this weekend in a big way.
Yeah, I think working out is maybe an understatement. my goodness. Like you said, all out-of-region guys, all defensive guys. So, yeah, this is, if you've paid attention, this is maybe expected to some degree. But to see it happen all in one day, I think, is pretty wild. And, look, we knew it was a good weekend, obviously a great visitor list for the Trojans and a lot of Southern influence. And you saw, you know, the staff hinting at some Southern puns and things like that on social media. So you knew that there was some buildup and they would execute to some degree. But yeah, this is a full flip of perception, I think. And I think you emphasize the defensive part of this and maybe say, "Hey, wide receiver who's trying to commit, give us a couple days. Let us enjoy this defensive Sunday that this might, you know, forever be known as." And so what I loved about it was that it was all defensive guys, all out of the region and in multiple classes too. So not only, "Hey, it's college football, we need a quick fix, here we go," but let's layer this thing and prove the commitment in multiple classes, you know? So I think that says a lot about it too, because, you know, a lot of people are, of course, leaning towards, "Hey, this is NIL, this is the big city, bright lights, and that's all this was." Well, you're not going to, you know, sell 2026 recruits on that. They can't sit down and have those same type of presentations. So I do think it's layered, and I do think this shows that this is not just a, you know, "Let's quickly fix this." No, this is a desired culture change, and those kids are seeing it, you know, with spring practice coinciding with most of these visits.
Yeah, it's absolutely no coincidence that it's all defensive guys. It's no coincidence that Ronnie Lott just happened to be on campus Tuesday when Drake Stubbs was here. It's no coincidence that Aaron Donald happened to be on campus this weekend for this. John, with Justice Terry, just kind of give us the scouting report. Why is he the number one defensive tackle prospect in the country?
There's really no glaring holes in his game. You know, we first saw him probably 2 years ago as this just big, strong young kid, 6'5", but he carried this body weight so incredibly well because he plays baseball, he plays basketball, he's an all year around athletic guy. So you're like, "Okay, well, where are the weaknesses?" Okay, well, he's a little light, and then he puts on weight and looks unbelievable as a sophomore, comes back as a junior, and he leans up even more to the point where he is now working inside and outside very successfully at, you know, 6'5", 6'6", 255 pounds. And now all of a sudden, hey, this is a different deal. It's not just a very stout run defender who can occasionally push the pocket with quickness. This is now a versatile, line them up wherever you want kind of defensive lineman. And by the way, dominant every time we see him, whether it's Friday nights, camps, et cetera, you know, for years. So as his body changed, the perception of him grew because he's already a premium position guy, but has shown the ability to move around with that projection. So I think that he's just the highest floor defensive lineman in this class. When he does just focus on football at the collegiate level, that'll really be the first time he's ever been able to do that. So we see those guys typically hit that learning curve even faster because they've just never been allotted 12 months for one sport. So I do think that's something that's going to actually increase the ceiling for Justice Terry once he gets to the next level. So no glaring holes, unbelievable frame, dominant every time we see him. He just kind of forced our hand and said, hey, this is not only a five-star, but at this point, you know, the number one DT on the board.
It is still March, and we saw this a few years ago when USC got a commitment from Michael Williams out of Georgia, and that didn't hold up over time. I know it's impossible to predict the future, but what do you think about the timing of this and USC's chance to see this all the way through to December?
Look, that's the million-dollar question now, right? Obviously, there is some precedent here, and then Michael happens to be a guy he really has built a close relationship with and looks up to, so you understand why his name sort of keeps coming up, especially down here in SEC country. But look, it's a different time. As we just talked about, there's a different commitment from USC on that side of the ball. You know, having Coach Henderson there is a different deal than Mike Hill ever dealt with. And then when it does come to fit and what happens going forward, you know, a big interior lineman in the Big Ten has just as much, you know, clout, conversation, perception, whatever we want to call it, as he does in the SEC. That argument is now, at a minimum, it's not as extreme or polarizing as it was, again, when Michael was a Pac-12 commitment at that point. And then, again, layering beyond that, kid's a business major. You know, he's clearly understanding of, you know, what it takes at that level, and USC is very reputable there. And obviously, when it does come to external factors beyond even academics, NIL, all of that, that's going to play to USC's favor as well. So I do think that this has staying power. It's not a guarantee or anything like that. But when you've been committed to one school for 14 months and you change your mind, it's really tough to imagine you pivoting right back unless many things change with those circumstances. So I do believe that this was again, as I wrote this morning, this wasn't a spur of the moment kind of deal. I think it was more of a stars aligning kind of deal for Terry and USC. And look, the Trojans have done well in the South. I mean, the first three commits of this class were all from the state of Georgia, right? So this is not something that's totally unprecedented. And there are some Southern ties in that coaching staff as well. So this is not, again, as surprising as it might have felt perceptionally this morning. We were more surprised because we didn't expect it to happen right now, given what we knew. You know, so I think those are two different items that people are maybe blurring, especially, again, those in SEC country. And understandably so for Georgia fans. They're not used to losing out these type of battles.
Good stuff. Moving on to Isaiah Gibson, and I'm just going to start with the biggest question that our subscribers have. You know that everyone loves the rankings. We recently updated our rankings. We have met 244 nationally, and of course, the USC fans couldn't help but notice he is 17 and 24 nationally on other sites. What was the conversation around him during the rankings meetings and kind of where he's at?
Yeah, I mean, look, we like Isaiah a lot. You know, a Rivals 250 guy is quite rare. But yeah, we also understand the other side of it. You know, he's in five-star range elsewhere, and he's not quite there for us just yet. And I think for our side of it, it's more about that second deal. You know, I think he profiles as a true 6'4", 6'5", lengthy edge prospect, great first step, who's going to be able to truly be a pass rusher and maybe be a pass rush specialist, which is great. It's a premium position. It's essential. It's a pass first sport. All of those things make a ton of sense. I think we're looking for that next layer with him. We just talked about it with Terry. Loved him as a high four-star for so long, and then he, boom, showed us something else that really forced our hand. We haven't quite seen that with Isaiah just yet, and it's just from a versatility and honestly an exposure standpoint. He's another South Georgia kid. He has not been as highly thought of for as long as Justice Terry, so the evaluation window with him is a shorter one to this point of the process than it is with Terry. But just like you say with recruiting, same deal with evaluations. It's March. We've got 11 more months with this class. We'll see him in spring football. We'll see him at some more camps, and certainly we'll see him as a senior at his high school or probably at an All-American circuit. So he'll have every opportunity to continue to move in one direction or the other going forward. But for us, I think right now, we view him as a pass rush specialist and a great athlete with a great frame at that, which is, again, why he's a four-star in that 250. But he doesn't have that full slate of boxes checked: versatility, coverage, ability to play in space, or the confidence that, hey, if he does bulk up, he can work inside and have some of the same success. We just haven't answered those kind of questions, at least to this point.
What's the thing he does best right now as a pass rusher? What's the one pass rush trait that stands out to you?
I love his counter moves. You know, he's got a great first step. He's explosive. I mean, great basketball player, double-double type of guy. But his counter moves really stand out, whether he's trying to set up an offensive tackle for a speed rush and then he ducks back inside, or he sticks with that interior rush and uses that great broad frame and combines it with a little bit of power, which is what we love to see, especially for a leaner guy, you know, like Isaiah is. So I think, again, this is a pure pass rusher, a guy who, you know, wherever he ends up, if it's USC or somewhere else, you expect, hey, third down situation, this is the kind of kid that plays as a freshman, even if there's, you know, minimal body change, minimal knowledge of the playbook. Get this guy on the field because he can absolutely get after the QB.
Who were the main contenders that USC beat out for his commitment?
Well, you'll be shocked. Georgia was certainly a program that, you know, a lot of folks have felt really good about. And what's interesting about his position is that this class, to this point in our evals, is not a loaded edge rusher class. I think there's a lot of tweeners. There's a lot of guys who could become great edge rushers or great pass rushers in general, but there's not a bona fide group of 5 or 10 guys that you're like, man, they're screaming off the edge. But Isaiah is one of them. So I do think that it probably widened the expectation that Georgia was going to be the pick. Oregon was in there. He liked Florida State and Clemson as well, a little bit closer to home. But again, USC was hanging around, building up to this visit, and obviously executed well, especially on the defensive line.
I want to stay with the 2025 guys for the moment. Let's go to Hilton Drake Stubbs, the safety from Florida. He was on campus earlier in the week. He was there Tuesday. We saw him during USC's spring practice. He'd been there a couple times and clearly liked what he was hearing. And what stands out to you about his decision and him also making that cross-country commitment?
Yeah, I think there was some surprise here too. Stubbs was one who had talked up USC more than Gibson and probably slightly more than Terry as well. You know, back at the Under Armour Orlando camp, he told me the two schools that make me feel like a true priority are Florida and USC. But of course, when you're a Jacksonville guy, defensive back, and you frequent Gainesville, it's going to lean folks' perception towards the Gators. And he all but admitted that was the school earlier in 2024 that he visited and nearly committed to. So basically a public leader of Florida with USC right there in the group thereafter. So you knew that the Trojans would chip away. He was going to set the official visit for the summer months as well. So this was going to be a longer standing battle. But again, comes off the board sooner than expected. I think he was at Alabama on Saturday, so he was able to take several visits. Colorado, I think Auburn hosted him recently as well. So Stubbs was really getting out there, putting himself out there, trying to see where the right fit was. But USC was a program that was at worst number two for him going into this part of the process. So not as big of a surprise, only relative to a clear number one ahead of USC going into this with the Gators being at state. But obviously, again, that's what we're seeing. We're seeing a change of perception and culture there. So he kind of rode that momentous wave, I think.
For sure. And as mentioned earlier, a top 50 national prospect. Give us the scouting report, the breakdown of Stubbs.
I was going to say, we've got Stubbs and Terry ranked higher than many others, to counter.
I make this point all the time. We only get negative feedback, no positive feedback in those regards.
Yeah, we have Kelly ranked the highest as well when we get there. But Stubbs, man, just balance. We get everything with that Stubbs tape. He's got a great frame, legitimately 6'1", extremely long, muscular build, and has some corner stuff in his game, which we love with safety projections. We love that ability to say, hey, go lock up with the slot receiver, contend with this, you know, modern flex tight end. So he's got that in his bag. But really, his instincts just jump off the page. Whether you watch him at 7-on-7, certainly on Friday nights, the range, the instincts, the ball skills are all at a very, very high level. Now, he's not the twitchiest kid, which I think is, you know, it's a great safety class, so him being top five says a lot. But I think his biggest detractor from a trait perspective is he's not the twitchiest, fastest kid out there that's going to play safety at the next level. But, man, what you want to see is the ability to make up for it with instincts and just pure playmaking ability. And he shows that in spades. And he has for years against really good competition in the Jacksonville area as well. So we're huge, huge fans of Stubbs. I think he's a guy who can work all around the secondary, move around, and eventually settle at that safety spot.
Good deal. And we'll flip it to 2026. You talked to Dominic Kelly today about his decision. Kind of give us the rundown on how USC swayed him so early in the process.
Yeah, I think this one was a little bit more conventional. This was, hey, big city guy, Tampa guy, and I want to, you know, continue that vibe. So I think Miami and USC became the two schools that, you know, he was really into this early in the process. But you know, he said he met with Lincoln Riley on Saturday, and that was kind of it. Like he said it all kind of came together at that point. And he's another one who, by the way, really mature for a sophomore in high school, talked about almost all of the non-football advantages of USC, whether it was NIL, education, diversity. I mean, he went into areas that, you know, we typically don't hear relative to why a certain college won out. So really like that from Kelly, just from a, you know, journalism standpoint. But it seemed like USC really emphasized the right parts of football and beyond to Kelly while on campus. And he's another one, you know, 7-on-7 teammate of Stubbs at Raw Miami, which will be every Trojan fan's favorite 7-on team. They were able to go out there, I believe, in January and then again this month. So I think that part of the process makes it easier to commit and fall in love a little bit earlier in the process than some others.
Well, before I let you go, we have you on here. We might as well ask about Julian Lewis and his spring visits tour, which heads to USC next week for the finale. He's been to Georgia, Alabama, Auburn, Colorado, if I have it off the top of my head correct. What's your latest read on the number one recruit in the country and USC's five-star QB commit?
Well, if you would have asked me going into the weekend, I would say, hey, you know, USC's in a really good spot here, but Georgia's never going to stop. We know this. You know, they've taken a 2026 quarterback, so they have really centered on Julian in 2025. Now you ask me, you know, today, and I'm like, yeah, Georgia's going to be maybe more relentless, you know, for Julian. You know, I do think it's probably a two-team battle between USC and Georgia, which is becoming a theme this weekend. No disrespect to the other schools. I just think that these two programs have just a longer established relationship with him and his camp. His camp is very important in any, I guess, update when it comes to where he may be leaning. And I also think, you know, look, there's a reason he committed to USC. You know, that was just as certain as the reclassification up to 2025 was, you know, with this kid. This is a, you know, been recruited since middle school type of generational quarterback. And we just don't see a lot of those guys pivot off of their initial commitments, barring, you know, a lot of changes, coaching changes and sort of the usual stuff we do see. But for the most part, these generational guys kind of stick to their initial commitments. So we don't overlook Georgia, and we understand, again, in-state, you know, obviously so successful, and now they're starting to, you know, produce NFL quarterbacks at a higher clip. But that's the one position where you just don't – you put it in its own box. QB is in its own box, and it's still Lincoln Riley's game. You know, he is the dictator – and not in terms of a tyrant, but in terms of a predicator of how pieces move, he dictates the pace of quarterback recruiting in just about every cycle. And he latched on to Julian very early, and it affected other classes. You don't have to be an analyst or an experienced one to understand Julian was his guy for a long time, regardless of what class he was going to come out in. And it affected others, you know, pre-reclass and certainly post, you know. So when Lincoln buys into recruits like that, he usually gets them, you know. So I do think that that's the precedent that I'll latch on to at this point in the conversation, although I will acknowledge Georgia is absolutely the top threat. And those other schools are still in it. You know, Julian's going to do his due diligence. But for me, this is a USC-Georgia deal until it's not.
Good stuff. Actually, I'm going to sneak one last one into you because we referenced just the stacked visitor list that USC had this weekend. And we've talked only about the commits. But they also had another five-star D-tackle on campus in Elijah Griffin as Savannah, Georgia. Just kind of give us an overview of his recruitment. And obviously, you know, we don't know yet how this weekend resonated with him, so I won't ask you to predict on that. But just going into it, what was your read on where he stood?
He's another who's been really high on USC for some time. And certainly a lot of Georgia vibes. This is Savannah Kiss you mentioned. The talk between here and Terry has been more, imagine if they combine at Georgia, but now I think we got to shift that conversation. Imagine if they combine in Los Angeles. You know, I do think Griffin has been pretty open as far as an elite multi-year recruited prospect has been, which is why he hadn't come off the board as early as Terry did for the in-state Bulldogs. So I think his recruitment is truly more wide open, and it could potentially last longer. Although at one point today, I'm like, I'm not ruling out anyone committing to USC. So yeah, we were digging on Elijah Griffin today, but it was more so, did you commit, more so than, hey, you know, how was it out west? So I do think this is going to be a longer traditional national battle, you know, for the guy who was the number one DT in the class before Terry leapfrogged him in this last update.
Great stuff. I have a feeling that we'll be talking again soon, but you never know. John, thank you so much for your insight and perspective, as always.
Absolutely, Ryan. Thanks for having me.
Okay, back into the show. After a long hiatus, you've been clamoring for him. You've been clamoring for a podcast, period, and that time, it's spring football. We're through the doldrums of January and February and the first part of March, and it is time to go. And so back on the show is Max Brown, the former USC quarterback, our longtime TrojanSports.com analyst. Max, great to have you back on.
What's up, Ryan? Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's funny, these March podcasts are a lot more difficult these days than they were a few years ago with all the new faces and moving pieces. And usually they're back in the day, there was only like, all right, you got like three or four, maybe a half dozen guys graduating high school, early enrollees in spring ball that were kind of top of mind. Now you got a whole revamp of, feels like, a couple dozen dudes, which is crazy, but makes for a lot to talk about.
The challenge for me is that then coupled with the fact that not only do you have like 25 or 30 new numbers or whatever it is, but everyone else on the team changed their number this offseason. So I'm out there at practice this week, and I don't know who's who. I'm having to consult the roster every 2 seconds, and I have to learn the 85 numbers again this year.
And the guys you do know, they probably gain 15, 20 pounds, right. And then they're a whole new body type.
Right. I'm sure by next week I'll have it all down, but no, it's been interesting. A lot of new faces, a lot of new storylines, and that's where we're going to start. We're just going to start broadly. We haven't talked to you in a while. We haven't talked since the season ended, so this could go any direction. But I just want to get your five most intriguing storylines as USC dives into spring practice and really dives into the 2024 calendar year here. And just have you run it down, 1 through 5. What is top of mind for you, Max?
Yeah, no surprise. I'm going to start right away with the quarterback position. We didn't get a chance to debrief on this podcast after the after the bowl game, but rightfully so. I feel like that's a huge talking point. It's just, you know, the you had the success in the Holiday Bowl and the leverage, or I guess the springboard it gets you into the months ahead, which I think there's a lot of truth to that. And the comp that I always go back to is my first year at USC, coming in the spring of 2013 after a horrible December 2012 Sun Bowl game where Matt Barkley, he did not play in that game, and it was the first opportunity for then Max Whittick to back up. Very similar scenario, it felt like, to Miller Moss's dynamic, in that it was a guy that had some street cred in the program, had some talent, coaches were excited. But unfortunately for Max's case, he did not play well in that bowl game, and You know, the weather was a mess in that game. But I say that in the context of spring ball. The temperament around spring ball was a lot different because it was, hey, it's very much an open competition versus if he had success in that bowl game, that would not have been the case. That would have not been the talking point. And I think it very much would have been his job to lose, which, again, was not the case back in the spring of 2013. And there was a true open competition versus now it feels like the temperament is it's very much Miller Moss's job to lose. And I remember, I think last summer we may have talked about it, or I've talked about it with my SC friends, is if you were a betting man last summer, I kind of had the inkling that, hey, this is Miller Moss's job to lose. Even, I mean, back then it felt like the popular thing to say was, hey, they could go get a transfer portal quarterback. And obviously they did to some degree in this past offseason with Jaden Maiava. But this time last year, it was very much, hey, when Caleb's gone, we'll just go get the next big guy from in the transfer portal market. And that obviously did not happen. I think Miller's performance in the bowl game played a huge reason in that. But I also think it speaks to just the confidence that the staff has in Miller. And I follow Miller on social media. I've mentioned this a couple times on this podcast. I used to train with him back when he was in middle school, elementary school. So I've known him for a while. And it just feels like he has a very strong rapport with his teammates from a leadership standpoint, from a confidence standpoint, which is not insignificant for Miller and the quarterback position. But I also think it's not insignificant from a culture building. You know, you're going to the guy that's somewhat earned his way rather than, you know, going and plucking a Will Howard is the name that I felt like was circling around there for a little while from Kansas State, now at Ohio State. And so it's just interesting. And last little nugget I'll say on this too is I feel like Lincoln has taken the stance that, hey, we know we wanted to get a young guy in the portal and we want to get a guy that played. I'd be curious if behind the scenes, if that's actually the truth or if that's just a convenient talking point because you ended up getting a Jaden Maiava. I'd be curious if they, you know, were really trying to get a Will Howard or some of these other bigger name quarterbacks and they swung and missed. And, you know, Jaden was the next best guy that they could get. And I think it was a really strong pickup. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, I'd be curious by the scenes if the conversation in the first week of December was different than after Miller's bowl game, where if you're a transfer quarterback, and I was that once upon a time, you got to go somewhere you can play. If you're a transfer quarterback, you can't be going in somewhere and having to really fight for every inch for a guy like Miller, who obviously has a strong footing. So I just think that's intriguing, something to track, something to talk about. But I do think the quarterback room's in a solid spot. But anytime you're having to replace the number one overall draft pick in the NFL, naturally that position is going to take a step back. And I think it's on the coaches, it's on Miller, and it's on the teammates around him to really rise to the occasion, because you can't just bank on having the best quarterback in college football every single year.
Yes. Lots of meat on the bone there to chew on. I want to get to a few points that you brought up. I wonder what would have happened. So I truly do believe that they were pursuing Will Howard. And I mean, we know they were because he visited campus and those kind of guys in early December. What would have happened if he had made a quick decision? Like if Will Howard from K-State had come on his visit in early December and said, this is where I want to be, and committed. And then Miller Moss goes out and throws for 6 touchdowns in the game and has all his teammates talking about how it's his turn, he's earned it, he has their belief. What would have happened then? So I think what he did definitely changed the course of how they approached it. And Lincoln has said that. He's basically said that after that performance, either Miller scared off any veteran quarterbacks that they would have been talking to, or he said it both ways, or that they decided they didn't need to pursue a kind of an established veteran. But it would have been really interesting if that had happened before that game. And I mean, you can say that bowl game wasn't, you know, a major pressure cooker of a game, but it was for him. Like, his entire career basically hinged on that, and he did a great job leading up to that game of batting away that narrative and just saying, oh, it's just the next moment, it's just the next thing. But everything he had worked for pretty much his whole life, and it's not like he wouldn't have had an opportunity elsewhere if it didn't happen here, but he wanted to be the USC quarterback. That meant something extra to him, and this was his chance to make that happen. And if he had gone out and not played well, I firmly believe that there would be somebody else here as the favorite for that job entering spring. So everything hinged on that game. And so carrying all that weight and that pressure, even if the game itself didn't matter in the grand scope of things that mattered, everything to him, and to go out and throw for 6 touchdowns and 372 yards, that was really impressive. I wanted to get just your analysis of what he showed you in that performance.
Yeah, he showed me that he can be a high-level quarterback, that he can run the offense, that you're not having to change the plays that you're calling. Obviously, he's not going to be able to do some of the magician stuff that Caleb Williams that he's done in the past. But if you're Lincoln Riley, I think the entire playbook and everything you want to call and install from an offensive scheme perspective is still in play with Miller Moss. And to your point about Miller proving it to, proving it to himself, I think that's spot on. And I think he also proved it, I guess you alluded to this, but proving it to his teammates. There's a difference between, hey, we see this guy just balling out in practice and we like hanging out with him off the field. So yeah, we're down with Miller Moss being our quarterback versus, hey, you go out and you throw for 6 touchdowns. And then now the defense has a different confidence. The defense isn't having to answer questions in spring ball about, hey, what can Miller Moss be, and kind of the uncertainty there. No, there is proof. There is data, which goes a long way, not just for Miller and Lincoln and the confidence there, but I think how the entire team builds around who their quarterback is, especially when you're bringing in transfers and whatnot. So I was impressed. I wasn't overly surprised, though, if I'm being honest. I think the way that you heard Lincoln talk about Miller and even Caleb talk about Miller over the past 18 months before that game, I think you knew that skill level was in there. And to your point, just happy that Miller showed that, because there was a world where, I mean, it's only just 4 quarters of football in a bowl game where you're throwing to younger receivers where, hey, guys might be checked out. There's a world where he had a so-so performance, not even because of his own fault, just because of, you know, the hand that he was dealt. And again, the whole narrative around this offseason and the quarterback position could have been entirely different. But good on Miller for taking advantage of his opportunity.
I wonder if he had even just had a modestly good performance if he'd be in a different position now. If he had gone out and thrown for 2 touchdowns, 1 pick, and they won, but it wasn't as overwhelming as what he did, would he be the clear-cut guy entering spring, or would we have a veteran transfer in now looking like the favorite? So I almost kind of lean to thinking that he had to do what he did. He had to overwhelm. He had to leave no doubt, like, this is my job. Like, I've earned this. This is my chance. And I think he did. You're going to hear a lot of talk this spring about quarterback competition. Lincoln's going to be asked about it every week. I don't believe there is one. And that's not a knock on Jaden Maiva at all. In fact, getting a first look at him this week, he's taller. He's bigger than I thought he was. He throws a really nice ball. Of course, us media, we only see the warm-ups and the individual drills, and we're not seeing team periods, so it's hard to have a real evaluation, but he looks the part for sure. And I have no doubt that if he got thrust in there this year, that he'd bring a lot to the table and probably be pretty good. But he's coming in and learning this offense fresh, and what Miller has going for him beyond what he showed in the bowl game is he has 2 years in the system of really mastering everything and getting on the same page with Riley, getting on the same page with a lot of these teammates. Because a lot of the guys who are now the focal points in this offense were the guys that he was throwing to with the second team in practice. So he has rapport with Jacoby Lane and with Deuce Robinson and with Mekhi Lemon. And as I mentioned before, there is a really just – you can sense it. You can tell – or you just hear it from what the players say, but his teammates believe in him. He is the leader of this team right now. He has the trust and confidence of the players. So to think that there's any uncertainty about whose job this is right now, I think is a forced narrative. But it will get asked every week, how's the competition going? Have you named the starter yet? This and that. And it's all kind of silly to me. I won't be asking those questions, because unless Miller Moss is injured or just has a cataclysmically poor spring or summer, he's your starting quarterback versus LSU to start the season.
I think it's a good point. Last little nugget, and then I'll move to my second key, is I also think with Maiva coming in, with I'm Malachi Nelson not working out, I do think to backfill with a young guy you feel good about is important. I think it's always easy to say you can go get the next guy in the portal, but as we saw this past offseason, it's not as simple as that. And Malachi obviously came in with a ton of hype, so to replace him with a guy you feel good about, love that. And I honestly hadn't thought about this point I'm about to say until just now, but if we're talking about college football as the new pro football, and if you're getting Miller at a value NIL price versus if you had to go get Will Howard at X amount in the market, which is the reality of college football now,
yep.
I wonder if behind the scenes that frees up some extra money to go get a front seven player in this next cycle in the transfer portal,
sure.
or if that helps you go get something else. I'd be curious behind the scenes in the NIL front, which a lot of us do not have exposure to, of the moving pieces there, but that is a key component. Would be interesting to see how that shakes out. And speaking of transfer portal and guys coming in, my second key factor, or I guess storyline for spring, is I'm very curious to see if we get clarity at the linebacker position. It sounds like the starting group, at least for the very first drill for in spring ball, was Mason Cobb and Easton Mascarenhas Arnold. Both Arnold brothers are guys that I've covered a lot. I've called a handful of Oregon State games the past couple of years, and there was not a linebacker in the Pac-12 that was more productive than Easton Mascarenhas Arnold last year. But what's interesting to me is you could have said the same thing about Oregon State's linebacker the year before, Roberts, blanking on his first name, but Roberts, he was the leading tackler in the Pac-12, if I'm not mistaken, the year before. And it's hard to tell if that was, you know, how much of that is scheme and how much of that is talent. Obviously, there's talent there in some regard to put up those numbers. But Easton's a guy I'm very intrigued about because, again, awfully productive last year. But then there's guys like Rayshon Davis. There's guys like Eric Gentry. I mean, we were talking about Eric Gentry as maybe the best player on the defense last year. And now you're not sure exactly where he fits in. You're not sure, you know, the weight gain topic comes up a bunch. You know, is he a Sam linebacker? Is he inside? There's just a lot of talent there. I think there's a lot of productivity you can tap into. And just with a new defensive staff, new defensive scheme, hoping we get clarity. Don't know if we will, because I'm sure all four of those guys will play in some degree. But where do things shake out with that group? Where do things shake out with Eric Gentry specifically? Because I have to think, if you're Danton Lynn, that's the type of player that you need to get him on the field 80% of the snaps in some way. If that is inside, if that is outside, if that is rushing off the edge, we'll see. But that group has a lot of possibilities for me.
Gentry is just the biggest enigma on this roster. Because honestly, it was 2 years ago. It was that 2022 season where he was like the defensive MVP until he hurt his ankle. And he was looking like a foundational piece of what they were building there. And then last year, his playing time was volatile and all over the place. And the coaches were saying it's because he wasn't healthy. And he was tweeting out stuff about, I've been healthy all along. And just some very weird vibes about everything. And he clearly wasn't like just a keystone. There were games where he played a lot, games where he didn't play as much. And now he has new staff to evaluate him. What's interesting is that all the talk this week, this first week of spring practice, has been about the offseason strength gains and the weight gains and how that was the biggest big emphasis. And they really had a lot of accountability every day on weigh-ins. Like you had to hit your marks or there were consequences and you had to do extra stuff, etc. But it was more so in past years. The weight was really tracked closely and the emphasis was getting bigger and stronger. And almost everyone on the team did. But guess who didn't? Eric Gentry. last year, 215 pounds. On this year's spring roster, 215 pounds. So didn't put on a pound from last year, which is interesting. We asked Danton Lynn about him on Thursday, and he basically said, I've never had a player like him and with his frame. And I think he's still trying to evaluate and make sense of how best to use him. And then just to your other point about who it's going to be out there, and everyone loves to get excited about who were the first two guys out there for spring. Almost always, that is just a deferential move to the veterans and not like some great harbinger of what we're going to see in September. And so, yeah, Easton and Cobb are the two veterans in that unit. No surprise they'd be the first two guys out there. I would caution people not to make any assumptions just yet. It very well may end up being them, for sure, because they both have pronounced leadership qualities. And obviously, I think bringing in Easton, with this coaching staff identifying him and bringing him in, I think he's probably a lock to be one of those two guys. And the question is, who's the other guy? And within that, does Rajon Davis get a different evaluation from a new staff and is maybe finally has his chance? Or if he comes out of spring and he's not looking like one of the guys, he almost has to transfer. This is his last year. You can't go 4 years and never get your shot as a top 100 prospect. So a lot of interesting storylines with the linebackers. Absolutely. I think you are spot on to put them in the number two slot there.
It's a good point with Davis too. Number three for me, the thing that piqued my interest the most after the first couple of days of the spring ball presser was Jonah Monheim moving to center.
Yes.
That was a surprise to me, and a surprise because a couple of reasons. One, I mean, very rarely do you see a left tackle body, which, especially in college where those guys are hard to find, very rarely do you see them move inside because that tackle position is so hard to fill. So that's the first surprise. And then the second surprise is just how early this decision is being made from a spring ball standpoint. I mean, we're week one in spring ball and they're already making this decision. This is the type of decision that usually it takes, oh, we're repping him at center for a few practices here and there, and then that's maybe clarity you get at the end of spring. But they've already made that decision week one, which I think speaks to a couple things. I think it speaks to how highly they think about Jonah and his ability to adjust just big picture, but also maybe to Jonah's credit of saying, hey, that's where my future's at in the National Football League, or hey, I'm going to need to be a versatile offensive lineman. It honestly reminds me of Max Turk, a guy that I played who could literally play all five positions on the offensive line. And that gives you a lot of value when you look ahead at the NFL. And good on Lincoln for accepting that, because again, usually coaches are, if we're being honest, they're not necessarily worried about your NFL outlook first. They want to lock down their left tackle spot first. And so there's something there. I also think it speaks to the maybe trust they have in the other bodies that they can fill in the guard and tackle spot. So just Jonah Monheim going to center, very interesting. I think the ripple effect of how do things shake out there, because the talking point, you know, last year, I guess this time last year, it was, hey, Jonah's going to be your right tackle. How do things shake out across the board? Obviously, Jonah then moved to left tackle, but it's just different. There's a lot of possibilities there. It feels like there's a lot of different offensive linemen that are in the mix, but that is a very unique move. It's surprising to me. I feel good about it because of how early this move has been made. I think because it's made week one of spring ball, there's a lot of probably confidence in what that could bring and the security there. And maybe it's a learning lesson that Lincoln's had from past groups. He coached Creed Humphrey, the center for the Pro Bowl center for the Chiefs when he was at OU. Maybe there's, hey, I understand the value of what that center position could be. You saw it with Brett Nealon a couple of years ago in terms of how that group came together. I think there's a lot to that move, and it's not just as simple as, oh, he's just moving down two spots. I think there's a big ripple effect that could come about with that move.
I think you hit the nail on the head in a few ways, and one of them is about the timing of it. And it wasn't even made the first week of spring. This was made like when Jonah came back, pretty much, because we've heard that through all of PRPs, he's been exclusively working at center. So this has been like a predetermined thing well in advance of even thinking about spring practice, which makes me think that maybe, and he didn't say this, we talked to him on Tuesday and he didn't say this, but I'm just kind of reading the tea leaves here, and makes me think that maybe an incentive for him to come back for his fifth year was to be able to showcase himself at a spot where he's been told is his best chance at the next level. And if he was going to come back and just play tackle again, maybe his stock was already as high as it was going to get as a tackle, and he would have had a harder decision about considering leaving after last season. But he's heard for several years now that his best chance next level is as a center. And if he can come back and master that position but also showcase himself, that has great value to him. So I have to imagine that was kind of a mutual decision made in conjunction with his decision to come back, is my read on things.
I think that's a great point. I hadn't thought about it through that lens. I'd be willing to put money on that being a conversation topic of, hey, coach, if I'm coming back, I know no spot's guaranteed, but I better give every single opportunity to play center first and foremost. I think that's a great call. And if he was day two type of pick, I don't know exactly where he would have been at in the tackle market. But if you then project next year where, hey, I have a whole year, couple of years of film at both tackle spots, and oh, by the way, I'm comfortable snapping the rock. Yeah, his status could certainly be a day one pick.
To your point, it is a really bold move for them, though, because they actually have no tackle depth. So it's not like, oh, well, you know, we have a lot of bodies here that we can fill these spots. Let's address center. Like, they had no obvious choice at center. It was either make this move with Monheim, or you have the walk-on Killian O'Connor, who was the backup last year. How much do you trust him to take on the full role? Or it was, is four-star true freshman Jason Zanamela going to be ready as a true freshman to take on that very pivotal, important position? So they didn't have a lot of options, and this is probably the most sensible in that regard. But you're also now taking one of only three experienced tackles you have. And experience is a stretch of the word, because one of those guys is Elijah Page, who really didn't play until to the bowl game. Now, Lincoln Riley said that he thought that Page's performance at left tackle in the Holiday Bowl was the best tackle performance they got all season. So they're very confident with him taking on that left tackle role. You have Mason Murphy at right tackle, who's played there a bunch. He's played inside, too. He's been up and down the last 2 years. But you have no one beyond them. I mean, no one that's played even a meaningful snap in a game. And so they're going to go out there after the spring and get a tackle through the portal. And we'll see if there's a competition at right tackle, maybe with Murphy. But definitely a bold move. I want to ask you real quick, though, Max, just the dynamic with a quarterback breaking in a new center. What is Miller Moss having to do this spring, this summer, to really get on the same page with Jonah in that regard and get Jonah ready for that role?
Yeah, I would say that adjustment's a lot easier now in today's age of football, where less under center, more shotgun, which is, from a familiarity standpoint, is easier to navigate. And then less protection and run game responsibility just in general, with more spread type of offenses. I remember my first spring at USC, we were breaking in Max Turk at the center spot, and that's a true pro-style offense with a lot of protection calls, and you're identifying the mic pre-snap every single time, and there's a much more thorough run game package that's just on the center to identify those checks. And that was a challenge. I remember there were days in spring ball where there were a lot of fumbles between all three of us quarterbacks back in the day, between Turk at that time, and Turk ended up being a NFL caliber center, so, you know, it wasn't a talent thing, but it's a big adjustment. And I think, you know, the same goes true of once you do get that familiarity, it goes a long way. And I just think having the 8 months of off season, Miller, Jaden, and Jonah working together, it just goes a long way from familiarity. And there's also a leadership standpoint too. Like, the center is the guy making the calls, and when you are the guy that has to be vocal, that naturally just leads to a bigger leadership role in the offensive line meeting rooms and off the field and whatnot. So there is, again, to that whole ripple effect comment, Jonah stepping up into that center role. Yes, centers might not be as valuable as left tackles just objectively, like big picture in the game of football, but there still is a big importance to the center position. And you see that at all levels with, you know, teams. When teams have a good center and it sets the tone for your offensive line, and that's the guy breaking the huddle every single time and has that edge, that can set the tone for your offense.
Good deal. All right, number four.
Number four, this is a sneaky one, and it feels like I've been saying this for the past couple of years, but where are we at with the tight end room this spring?
What tight end room?
exactly. And I know that's not like a sexy thing to say, but we are going into year three under Lincoln Riley's system, and the first 2 years, the tight end room has been virtually non-existent. I know Lake McCree has, you know, filled that role, but in terms of that room being impactful, we have not seen it. And again, I say that through the context of Lincoln Riley, when he was coming from Oklahoma, they had strong tight ends. They had strong H-backs. That was a big part of their offensive attack. And that's not been the case so far, first couple years at SC. And it's even more important because with Lincoln or with Caleb Williams behind center, I like the idea of going true three and sometimes four receiver sets, because I felt like that's what put the most fear in a defense, is Caleb Williams, you know, really having the ball in his hands and making plays. But this year with Miller Moss and that, not, I don't think that can be the identity of your offense. And I think when that can't be the identity of your offense, that means you have to lean more on the tight end position. This time last year, I thought Deuce Robinson would play more of that tight end type of role, even if he was a really athletic tight end. I just thought that his body would progress into a more tight end type of scheme. Obviously, it's not how the cards have unfolded. I mean, and I say that just because it felt like on the recruiting services, he was more tight end. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm naive, and it sounds like maybe the plan was receiver all along for him. So, again, maybe I was just uninformed with that. But if he's not playing tight end, Lake McCree is injured, which it sounds like he's hopefully ready for fall camp, but it's going to be he's going to be cutting it close. And outside of that, I don't really know where else you go with the tight end room. So it's a concern from me, because I don't know necessarily who you go to, but it's also a concern because I think this offense needs the tight end to be a component, a real component, given the new faces behind center. And I just think that needs to be an added element to this offense, and curious if we end up getting clarity coming out of spring with that position at all.
Interesting. Yeah, probably not out of spring, but maybe in fall camp, where they'll add some bodies, because right now it's just Carson Taparachi, the converted linebacker who you saw a little bit of in the bowl game, and Cade Eldridge, who was a freshman last year, and Joey Olson, who's an early enrollee freshman, who was kind of a wide receiver hybrid in high school. This summer, they will add Walker Lyons, a four-star from the last class who did a one-year LDS mission. He enrolls this summer. And Walter Matthews, the four-star from Georgia. They both come in this summer. So it's a fuller room, and then McCree's back. He's clearly the favorite for that job. But in spring, they definitely really can't work on a ton or establish a whole lot, because those pieces just aren't there. With Deuce, I think we were all naive during his recruitment, because we all talked about him as a tight end, and we talked about, well, Georgia wants him, and look at Brock Bowers and what they're doing with him. I think all along, though, Deuce and his family really were pushing the he's a wide receiver thing. And I think that they had a lot of say in that being how we started out here. All right, number five, bring us home, wrap it up. What do we got?
Number five, I was kind of like 5A and 5B, so I'm gonna loop them all together. The first one is, who is going to be the defensive guy that steps up? It feels like every spring there's always like you come out of spring with one or two names that are like, oh, just wait for fall for this guy. And who are those guys specifically at the defensive line spots and the safety spots? It feels like there's names out there. It's not like the question is, you know, who is literally going to play in those spots. You can kind of pencil it in, but are we in a position where one of those guys steps up? I think the safety spot was outside of Kalen Bullock. I don't even think Kalen played to his full potential last year, but the other safety spot I think was a huge vulnerability for the USC defense, with Danton Lynn coming in as a former safety himself and not that far removed from his playing days. I think that's a value add, that I see him really leveling up the safety spot. But is there a guy, you get some of the UCLA transfers coming in, who are those guys that step up? And then defensive line-wise as well, a lot of attractive names. You have Barra in there in the middle. You know what we're getting there. But edge rusher-wise, you need more from that group. Who are the guys at week five of spring that are saying, hey, he had a really good spring, we're excited for him going forward? And then that kind of loops in to my other point, and this is more of a philosophical point, but the overall temperament around the team to me feels like a total 180 from last year. Last year you had the reigning Heisman Trophy winner, you had tons of buzzworthy transfers coming in, you had a ton of hype, ton of expectation. USC was a top five team heading into the season, and I think that expectation, that buzz, I think led to a level of complacency within the team, both from a maybe coach standpoint, but also a player and leadership standpoint. I think when you're coming into USC and the buzz is, hey, national championship, I don't think that sets a certain grittiness that you need, especially when you're building a program and you're not that far removed from missing bowl games like the team last year was, only a couple years removed from a coaching change and whatnot, versus this year. You know, you don't have the all-everything quarterback, and you don't have the flashy quarterback, and, you know, there's not a lot of there's just not a lot of buzz, candidly, around the USC program. I mean, Lincoln Riley was the chatter of college football 2 years ago, and that's not necessarily the case now, which I honestly view as a positive. I hope that allows the culture to shift over, guys to really get back to work, and anyone that's been around college football knows that, hey, when you hire new coordinators, that's great. But just as important as anything is what those guys do January through July in the weight room when you're not even talking to coordinators. And that goes on Benny Wiley. That goes on the leadership of this team. That, to me, is where wins are going to be had. And a certain standard and a certain – we're talking about culture changing and guys getting right and all that. The weight gain, that's a component to it. But it falls on the weight room, the player leadership, and I hope guys are pissed off with how last year happened. And it hits me as someone who covers the team, the energy and the buzz is completely different. And I hopefully the lack of buzz is a positive and leads to these guys getting right these next few months ahead.
It's a great point, and I think it really shifted during that bowl prep. And we maybe didn't realize it as it was happening just because you were still right in the immediacy of this disappointing season and the way things finished. And it was hard to look at it in a positive light. But after that game, and you heard all the players talk about, like, we knew we were going to play this way. Like, if you saw how we practiced the last 6 weeks, you wouldn't be surprised. And that was just the consistent theme up and down the roster and from Riley. So something changed. They kind of cleared the slate after November. Something changed in December, and it's carried over. It carried over through the strength program. And, I mean, Lincoln dropped the numbers this week. He said that the D-line alone gained 340 pounds since January. And you can definitely see it with some guys. We talked to Braylon Shelby on Thursday, and he is looking like a beast. And he's not alone. There's a lot of guys that fit that bill. Jacoby Lane mentioned that it was over 800 pounds of muscle added as a team. I don't have great reference points for that in terms of what's normal or anything, but it sure sounds like a hell of a lot.
I always go like, that sounds great, but honestly, and I know I'm not alone here, like, where was that last year? Like, why are we not doing that last year? And I know there's a lot of SC fans that probably share that, but I always take that with a grain of salt. I was like, hey, the positive side is, all right, maybe there's a change in mentality. I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. That's great. But then the flip side of me is like, well, then what the heck were we doing last year? There's a different amount of transfers and all that, but I always scratch my head with that one.
Well, I mean, one of the criticisms on Grinch, Alex Grinch, was always that he preferred smaller, faster over bigger and stronger. And that maybe he had set his preferences to have guys at certain weights. And I mean, Lincoln's kind of intimated that indirectly where he said one of his non-negotiables was hiring a coordinator who wanted to get bigger up front. So, I mean, what does that tell you? That tells you that was part of the previous regime's emphasis, and that as last year went along, he could see that this isn't going to work. Like, we have to be bigger. So I think it was really just a sobering reality as things fell apart last year that, okay, I put a lot of trust in letting this guy make kind of these decisions, but now I'm seeing that a lot of this criticism is fair and we have to go a different direction, and getting bigger is one of them. Just to address your thoughts on the safeties and the defensive line, the whole secondary to me is just a really fascinating competition because they have so many options now. They have so many guys. When you factor in a lot of intriguing freshmen too, the transfers, they address both spots to the portal pretty heavily. So it's pretty wide open. I think at safety, I think Kamari Ramsey, who comes over from UCLA, was a starter for Danton Lynn there, was a former four-star prospect, good pedigree, played well last year. I think he's probably a lock for one of those two spots. The other spot, wide open to me. You have Achille Arnold from Oregon State, comes in as a starter. You have Bryson Shaw, who started a lot of games for this team, obviously with up and down results. You have some really intriguing young guys like Christian Pierce and Zion Branch. If they get healthy, if they're full go, they both battled injuries over the last year, and Branch is obviously out this spring. So very intriguing, but I think Ramsey is the guy that they're banking on as being the one sure thing. And on the defensive line, they don't have a lot on the interior still. They have Bear Alexander. He has to be the guy. They brought in Isaiah Rakes from Texas A&M. He's never really had a major role at A&M over the last 4 years. This is his chance to really cap his career in a big way. It's too early for me to evaluate him, but he's a guy that they have to get a lot out of. Elijah Hughes, as a sophomore, can he step up? So there's a lot of questions on the interior, but on the edge, I have a lot of confidence that if it's Braylon Shelby having a breakout year, if it's maybe Anthony Lucas kind of doing a reset and this is the year he emerges, if it's Jameel Muhammad taking another step forward, if it's Cameron Fountain, the true freshman, rising up, they have a lot of options there. So I think, Max, I think we hit it all pretty much. I think you had a pretty good cross-section of topics there for us. Always plenty more to talk about with you. So we'll do it again soon. Great to have you back on. Enjoyed it.
It was fun. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
And that is the show. Thanks again to John Garcia Jr. Thanks again to Max Brown. Thanks again to everyone who listened. To everyone who joined back in as we get the podcast flowing again for the spring. USC has practice Tuesday and Thursday with media access. We'll be out there with full coverage as we've been doing all spring. Lots of great storylines. And I think we might get to talk to some of the new transfers this week for the first time. So be checking Trojansports.com for all your coverage needs of USC spring football. And good day to all.